Welcome back, family. We always like to remind you that we're one family and we mean it, each and every time we say it. If you've been with us from the beginning, you know that we've had a variety of guests over the years. We've always strived to bring you interviews that have been both educational and informative. See, this week's guest is perhaps one of the most important ones that we have ever welcomed to the family. Nurse Alice is a nationally board-certified and award-winning cardiac clinical nurse specialist with nearly two decades of experience in cardiovascular health, who has been called the best nurse in America. She stopped in to share with us valuable information about health, nutrition, and preventative care. We touched on topics from diabetes to heart disease and ways to take care of your family on a budget. I can't stress how important this conversation is. I hope that you not only listen, but share it with your friends and families. When you're done listening, please check out Nurse Alice's website, www.asknursealice.com, for more information if you have any questions. This is a good one, family. So let's go.
Ready to go. Let's rock and roll.
All right, so let me get my little clear my throat moment out the way. For anyone who doesn't know, my water and tea, yeah. For anyone who hasn't had the pleasure of experiencing what you bring to the table, please tell everybody who you are, what you do, and how you got to where you are.
So good. Hello to everyone. I'm really excited. My name is Alice Benjamin, but everyone knows me as Nurse Alice, America's favorite nurse. At least that's what they've told me, right? Dr. Oz said it, so, you know, I guess it's real if he says it, right? You know, it's
look,
just Dr.
Take
Oz.
All the superlatives you can.
Hey, exactly. And, you know, I was really honored when I heard him say that, because I'm like, yo, this is real. I mean, people tell me all that, and it's great, but, you know, when you make your way to kind of more national platforms, because everybody's going to tell you, your mom's going to tell you, oh, you're good job, great. But, you know, when other people start to recognize you, it really feels good. But I've been a nurse for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. I know I don't look like it. That's, you know, because that good skin, that black don't crack skin. But, you know, nurse for 20 years, I've worked primarily in the hospitals, like critical care, ICU, trauma, ER, and those type of things. And, you know, I'm really passionate about being a nurse. But I have to say, what drives me even more is trying to help keep people out of the hospital, out of those, you know, urgent crisis situations. And that kind of stems back to my childhood, right? Everyone has a story. Mm-hmm. And my story is, you know, we grew up in an underserved community, the hood, whatever you want to call it, right?
Right.
That's where I'm from. Proud, you know, I'm from the hood, but I'm so proud of how I've been able to take that type of situation and turn it into something positive. But my dad, you know, struggled with high blood pressure, diabetes, smoking, and all this stuff. And, you know, we didn't always have hindsight. We didn't know that we didn't have access to the best healthcare systems, education and support and all of those things. And long story short, I kind of, as the eldest daughter, I helped my dad through, you know, with a lot of his appointments, just by being the eldest daughter, helped my mom out and, you know, hold things down. And I just kind of saw a lot and I felt like something was missing. And my dad always told me, he said, Alice, you should be a nurse. And I'm like, Dad, no, I'm going to be an accountant. I got to count these coins. He's like, no, you're going to be a nurse. You're going to be a nurse because you're good at this. You know, you helped me feel comfortable. You helped me understand. And I wasn't even a nurse at that time, but I was trying to bridge the gap between the doctors and the nurses and my dad. And unfortunately, you know, my dad passed away of a massive heart attack, sudden, out of the blue. At least that's what we thought. But what I later learned is that there were things that were happening that we just weren't told to us or explained to us. So we didn't know. And it was that point that I decided I was going to be America's best nurse, best cardiac nurse in the world. And, you know, that was several years ago. And I kind of just set my compass to do that. And now I'm on these, you know, national platforms doing my best to educate people on preventative care, health and wellness. So I don't have to meet them in the hospitals and the ICU. So I'm still in the hospital. I'm still working in ICU in the emergency room, but I do a lot of work on the preventative side in the communities, in the digital world, right? That's where a lot of people are nowadays with a lot of people on social. And so, yeah, that's my goal. That's what I'm doing.
Okay. So I want to get to what the mission is in a second, but a lot of people's only experience or knowledge of what nursing is from TV. I mean, I think in a lot of professions, that's all we know is what we've seen on TV. And what, I mean, I guess not what does a nurse do, but how does a nurse, what's the impact a nurse has when you get to the hospital?
Oh my gosh. So I have to say that most if you think about it, hospitals only exist because there's 24-hour care. Mm-hmm. And who provides that 24-hour care? And it's nurses, right? There's 3.6 million nurses in the United States. We are 24/7, 365. When you're asleep, we're up, you know, taking care of your loved ones and things like that. So we do a lot, especially on those, on the off hours when everybody else is vacationing, relaxing, we're still on duty, right? So we do a lot to take care of people. And I think people don't really see that until they have their first encounter with an actual nurse in a hospital or a situation like that. So some people only, like you said, only know what nurses do from television. So we do more than just give shots, you know, or, you know, give pills, those things like that. Even and with Hollywood, love them or hate them, you know, the sexy nurse or the crazy nurse, Nancy, you know, nurse or the sidekick or wingman to the doctor. Now, I love my doctors, but nurses, you know, we're very smart. We're very capable. We literally lay our lives on the line to take care of your life. And it's something I really wish more people would see and know. And so also with some of the work that I do, I do a lot of mentoring. I get out and I speak at colleges and schools, even elementary schools, and hoping to really model and show people what it is nurses do. And not just nurses in general, but I'm going to go ahead and take it a step further and say nurses of color, because we're also, you know, we're a minority in that sense, too. And quite honestly, the patients, the healthcare workforce is not reflective of the patients that we treat. So, you know, for example, African-American, you know, very prominent with heart disease, diabetes, and all those things. Yet the care providers don't always look like people receiving the care. And I know that plays a role in some of the care that we've received, too. So my mission is to kind of bridge all of that gap and really help people understand what nurses do and be a role model so we can have a more diverse workforce when it comes to nursing.
There's a certain, excuse me, there's a certain amount of selflessness that has to be present to I guess, give your life to other people. I know you said it started with your father, but how do you keep that fire burning? Because I know everyone's had that moment. Well, I would hope everyone has had that moment where they've helped someone else. But in general, people tend to help themselves or those that matter directly to them.
Right. And that's a good question. And I think that's probably why the nursing profession is predominantly women. Not saying, I mean, there are men in nursing, but, you know, not as many as I would like to see. But when you think of a woman or a mother, you know, always taking care of kids, taking care of everybody else in the family and, you know, giving and really not taking care of herself because she's so busy taking care of everyone else. I think that's the mentality of a lot of people that go into nursing. We are selfless. And sometimes we don't even realize we're selfless. We'll be broke down and busted still trying to take care of people because it's just something that's deep within. And like for myself, it's not about recognition. It's not necessarily about the paycheck. It's not necessarily about any of those things. But where I find joy and where my cup gets filled is when I can make a difference in someone's life. And it's not always something that I'll hear someone say, but I can see it. So I get, you know, I receive a lot of reward and satisfaction when I'm able to help someone kind of turn their leaf when it comes to their health or help family members and patients really understand what's going on. And then, you know, usually what happens like a little later down the line, I'll see someone at the grocery store or they'll come back to the hospital and they'll say, hey, do you remember me? And I'll kind of turn my head a little bit like, you look very familiar. They're like, I'm Mr., you know, so-and-so, Mr. Jones, you took care of me when I had a heart attack last year and I want to come and say thank you. So those are the things that really make me feel good, knowing that I've made a difference in someone's life. And I don't think that any amount of money can replace that feeling. So that's what feeds me. And as a nurse, yeah, you have to be selfless because, you know, I'm not just going to say, oh, you know, it's lunchtime or I'm going, you know, I'm just checking out when there's a crisis happening or someone needs your help. You know, you just don't abandon people when you need your help. And that's one of the things that, you know, a lot of nurses we're selfless like that. We're always willing to give and give. And sometimes it's at the expense of ourselves. Not saying that we shouldn't take care of ourselves, but often it is.
Mm-hmm. do nurses get sicker than most people because they're constantly dealing with like illness?
You know what? I don't know the research on that technically, but I'm gonna say, I think you know we're humans just like the patients in our bed. So just like someone else is subject to high blood pressure, diabetes, or a heart attack, or catching the flu, so are we. And sometimes even more. So, like for example, during flu season, our emergency room was flooded. I mean, from the front door to the back door, it was just like canned like sardines. Everyone was sick. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we try to do things on the preventative side. Like as a nurse, I'm thinking like, okay, I need my flu shot. I need to get plenty of rest. I need to drink fluids. I need to stay on top of it. But, you know, and sometimes we'll do that and that'll protect us to a certain extent. But just by virtue of being around people who are sick, it's not uncommon for us to then catch the flu. If I'm taking care of someone who has a flu, you know, if they cough and I just happen to be in the right place at the right time and they didn't cover up when they cough, I'm subjected to the same things. And nurses, we know a lot about how to keep healthy, but by virtue, everyone still has freedom of choice, right? Mm-hmm. There's still free will. And, you know, not everybody practices the best lifestyle choices. So, you know, there may be, and not just nurses, but even other health professionals, they might, you know, still smoke, or they might drink, or they may not, you know, have a sedentary lifestyle. So we're still subject to those same things. But it's my belief that as a healthcare professional, I need to be the role model so I can help cheerlead you on in your mission, and kind of walk the walk and talk the talk with you.
All right, let's talk about the mission. Not to say that there's so many illnesses or life things that threaten the community in general, but the African American community in specific. But high blood pressure has been the one that I've heard about since I was like, as the old people say, yay high to a grasshopper. and I correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a disease that affects African Americans greater than other groups?
Yes. So the prevalence of high blood pressure in African American communities is the highest in the world.
Okay.
It is. And, you know, and I always like to tell people hypertension is the same thing as high blood pressure, or pressure's a little bit high, those type of things, because I think sometimes we not everyone's familiar with the term hypertension, or they'll say, oh, you know, I have hypertension, I have high blood pressure, or they may not know those terminologies. But it's highest in, you know, the Black communities. There's definitely science behind why it's high. Researchers actually believe that African Americans have a gene that's more sensitive to salt, which increases our blood pressure. There's some other genetic components as well. It's our, you know, historically in our culture, it's rich in foods. You know, yeah, our foods are rich in sugar and salt. Oh, and they taste really good. I know, but sometimes you do gotta tweak Grandma Emma's, you know, greens recipe, or that sweet potato pie, or those, you know. So we have really rich, soulful food, and we celebrate around foods, right?
Right.
So
right.
That's something there. And then as well, historically, you know, we've not always had access to the freshest fruits and vegetables, and so we have to have canned fruits and vegetables, and those things are high in salt. We fry a lot of food. So I remember growing up in South. Oh, I didn't grow up in South, but I have family, my dad's side of the family, and I would see like bottles of lard and stuff like, and just like things like that. We just were part of our diet, part of our foods, and we celebrated around that. And then we've not always had access to maybe the safest environments, or environments that are pro exercise, right? Pretty hard, right, to kind of grow up in the hood and be expected to, you know, jog outside when they're pooking them or shooting. You just can't do that.
Right.
So,
I mean, you could, but.
You could, but then you'd be in the ER with me, you know, for other reasons other than high blood. But, you know, so historically there's quite a few reasons, but in today's day and age, knowledge is power. And so one of the goals and things that I do, and I work very closely with American Heart Association, actually, with getting information that's relatable, that is easy to apply to our day-to-day life, that might seem to just make a small difference, but that one small thing
every day, every week, every month, over years makes a big difference in getting your blood pressure down.
So I guess the question then is, how do you eat food? And like you said, a lot of our lives as African Americans does revolve around food. And it's kind of like the place where people meet and discuss things, or everyone's looking for the new soul food spot, or the new Jamaican spot, or the new chicken spot. I mean, not to be stereotypical, but that's what we do. And
yeah,
how do you have the traditional Big Mama dinner, if you will, without all of those aspects being present?
So you can do it. You can do it. And actually, there are resources out there, and I'm just going to go ahead and shout out American Heart Association, because they actually have a soul food cookbook.
Oh, they do.
And it's free. Yes, it's free. It's online. I don't have the website off the top of my head, but they have a soul food cookbook. And it's really taking some of our favorite family historic recipes and, you know, like you said, Jamaican soul food, whatever it is, and then suggesting alternatives, ingredients to make things a little bit easier. And I'm just going to take my favorite. I love greens. I love greens. You used to put ham hock, bacon, and fatback, and all. Look, I don't even really know what fatback is. They just put it in there, and it was really good. But now, you know, it's still taking that and using smoked turkey instead, okay, right? So, you know, is there still a little bit of salt in there? Yes, but not as much. And you take away some of the cholesterol. And, you know, we put a lot of salt, but trying some other herbs and seasonings to kind of lighten up the recipe. Now, is it going to make it completely, like, are you going to see it in Whole Foods? Maybe not, but it's being realistic, right? Because this is what you grew up on. You're going to eat it regardless. But if you're going to eat it, let's try just put a little bit of a healthy spin on it. So there are definitely alternatives to some of the things that we're eating. Now, some people might find this next comment a little disrespectful, but fried chicken. Right. I love fried chicken. Who don't love fried chicken, right? But some of the recommendations with fried chicken would be, and I've tried it and it's good, but you know, it definitely is something you got to get used to. But did you know you can have fried chicken but bake it instead by using breadcrumbs?
Right.
And then putting it in the oven. So, you know, doing different things like that can be helpful to making our food healthier and decreasing, at least eliminating diet as some of the reason why you have high blood pressure.
Now, I'm proud to say I actually did know about the baked chicken one, so shout out to me.
Okay.
But recently, right, I got an air fryer. Is that okay? So that qualifies as switching it up. Good.
Yes, I'm ahead of y'all. Air fryer is like the new. It's just the new. Yes, that's like the new wave. You got to get an air fryer so you can be cool, hip, and healthy, y'all. So a lot of people are trying air fryers, but you know, I. And honestly, being a nurse as long as I have, I actually didn't learn about air fryers till about maybe 7 months ago. And that's because one of my friends was at the store and he has high blood pressure and all these things. He's like, Alice, I'm really trying to do something different. He said, what do you think about this air fryer? And I'm like, air fryer. And, you know, I learned through him, but I'm like, oh, yes, get it and get me one, too. But air fryers are, you know, it eliminates the grease.
Right.
It eliminates the grease and the oil and all those fats that are going to clog your arteries and cause high blood pressure, heart disease, and strokes, and all that other stuff you don't want. So shout out to air fryers. Yes.
Now, I guess that also leads to a question that's related, but maybe the tip of the iceberg. If I live in an area or I just don't have the income to afford an air fryer or smoke turkeys, we all know that it's cheaper to get fatback or ham hocks, or just, I remember when I was little, my mom would keep the jar of oil from like the previous ones, don't judge me, on the counter.
I know too.
Nah. I mean, let's be honest, that's just cheaper than eating healthy, if you will. Like, sometimes we can't afford it. Are there alternatives? Like, what can I do if I just don't have the money to afford the best way to eat?
Right. So kind of health hacks on how to eat healthier. So with the oil, and by the way, so I grew up with the same oil. I think we use like the same oil, and I don't know, maybe it's like a week or so. Mm. I don't know. But I just remember that oil. I remember that oil jar too. I think when it comes to health hacks and trying to eat healthier, when it comes to, and I recommend this to people, when you're going to eat something, if by all means you can bake it versus fry it, do that.
Okay.
Right. So that's something that, cause you're going to cook anyway. So, but instead, and I have to say, it's probably easier too, cause then you're not slaving over a hot stove and then your hair's not smelling like chicken grease. Cause you can tell, see, ladies, we don't like to get our hair done in fried chicken. I'm like, oh no, I got my hair done. I can't fry chicken today. But you know, bake your food versus frying it is one of the simplest things that I tell people. When it comes to fresh fruits and vegetables and things like that, those can be very expensive, you know, and even more so if you try to buy organic. And I'm going to just be quite candid, although organic is, you know, it's there without the pesticides and all those things. You know, as long as you take your fruits and vegetables home and you really, really wash them properly, it's probably not going to make much of a difference. But I tell people, buy fruits and vegetables that are in season. Mm-hmm. So I would do this a lot. So I, you know, whatever fruits and vegetables were on sale, that's what we were having. I know you want, you know, maybe you want, I'm making this up, asparagus. Asparagus is expensive, you know, but I'm going to buy asparagus when it's on sale and that's when we'll have it. So you just have to shop a little smarter. And then also depending on the stores that you shop at, like I love Whole Greens and Sprouts or Whole Foods and Sprouts and those type of stores. And they definitely have some great products there. But, you know, don't knock the mom and pop stores that are in the neighborhood or even the farmers markets. Okay. Farmers markets have some really great sales, really, really great sales, especially if you go around right near closing time, because then they're trying to get rid of everything. So they'll knock prices down. But, you know, think about where you're shopping and then buy what's in season as far as fruits and vegetables. And then, you know, I know growing up, we had a lot of canned vegetables. Everything would seem like in a can, right? But because they were just cheaper and you could keep them longer in your home, right? If you're going to have to eat canned fruits or vegetables, make sure like the canned corn or those canned green beans, before you put them on the stove or prepare them, rinse them out in some warm water. Rinse them out in water and wash off those extra salts or preservatives and things like that. So there's, you know, lots of health hacks that you can do, but I would say those that I just shared are some of the easiest ones. And then again, shout out to American Heart Association. Go to their website. They actually have a soul food cookbook that has other hacks. But I want to challenge people to just, you know, even if you don't have the information at your fingertips, and I've always been told that Google, you know, guy Google is all you need. I'm just being facetious, but just saying, you know, there's lots of information nowadays at your fingertips on how to make something healthier. And I really want to encourage people just to take those few minutes to do that, because I don't, you know, back in the days, we didn't have this, you know, internet and access to information that we now have, the, you know, just one click of a button.
Now, I've always heard, I got blood pressure and I got the sugar. And I know you didn't hear the sugar. And for the young people, sugar is diabetes. Like, it's not two different things. Is that something that's also like more prevalent in the African-American community, or is that has become just an epidemic period?
Absolutely. African-Americans are more likely to have diabetes than any other race. We are.
Okay.
There's also, you know, there's also some genetics behind that. But again, a lot of it's around our food and our culture. So not saying that it's going to be a curse for forever, because we can actually do things to prevent the onset of diabetes. And I'll be honest, I have diabetes on both sides of my family. Me and my sister have worked very hard. Like, we're not going to get diabetes. Let's be proactive. Let's eat better. Let's exercise more. You know, avoid those sugary drinks and all of those things that can predispose you to that. But getting back to the sugar, I hear that a lot. And, you know, some of it is people think that no news is good news. So first off, it's very important for people to, you know, have an annual health check to get screened for those things. And I know in today's society, our healthcare system is all kind of wacky right now. But there's lots of, you know, free clinics and resources and health fairs that you can go to that actually provide, you know, at least at a minimum, blood pressure screening and diabetes screening, and even cholesterol screening, because they know that, especially in our communities, those are very prevalent. But, you know, you got to know where you are, because just because you've never been told you have diabetes or you have the sugar, if there's someone, especially in African-American communities, if there is someone in your family, especially more immediate relatives that have it, the chances of you getting it are higher than if there was no one in your family that had it. So that's one thing. But you really need to know. And then same thing when it comes to blood pressure and kind of blood pressure screening. Get your blood pressure checked. You can go to Rite Aid or CVS and they have those free machines. You stick your arm in there, you get your blood pressure. And in fact, and people may not know, the standards for what is actually high blood pressure just changed recently. And they're even tighter and stricter. So if your blood pressure is 130 over 80 and above, then you're someone who has high blood pressure. And that can mean that that top number could be 131 and the bottom number is well below 80, still high blood pressure. Mm. Or that top number is well below 130, but that bottom number is above 80, still high blood pressure. So the most important thing I want people to know is that they need to at least get some baseline screening so you know what you're dealing with. So then you, because I think when people know that, they're a little more inclined to make changes or seek out information because they don't want to have a heart attack. They don't want to have a stroke. And quite frankly, high blood pressure and diabetes, if left untreated, will lead to those things as well as other complications that we don't even know. You don't even want to imagine.
So if you get or have diabetes, can you get diabetes or it's just you have diabetes?
No. So there are different types of diabetes. There's type one and type two. Usually the type one, you're insulin dependent. Your body doesn't make insulin. And most of the time, those are like when the younger kids have them. So they're born and that's pretty discovered earlier on and maybe okay. As late as adolescence. So that's there, but that's, you know, that's like the 10%. The other 90% are the type two diabetes. Mm. And so this actually is considered adult onset. And what happens here is that over time, your body's, the cells aren't receptive to insulin. So the sugar isn't utilized properly. So it stays in the blood, increases mm-hmm. your blood sugar levels, or your body slowly stops producing insulin or effective insulin to help the body utilize the sugar. So that's the more common one. So yes, you can be like, you know what? I'm 60 years old. No one's ever told me I had diabetes, but you've not gone in for screening and you go one day because you're at maybe, you know, either your wellness checkup or you're just not feeling well, feeling kind of tired, or you're like, you know, I'm always thirsty or I'm peeing a lot or I'm always hungry. And you just go to the doctor to get checked out. And they're like, you know what? Those are the top three signs that someone may have diabetes. And you find out that your blood sugars are high. So many people that I've taken care of don't find out to their later, almost, you know, late years that they have diabetes. But part of that is they didn't take the time to do the initial screening. And it's you know, a simple poke to obtain a simple poke. They just need a drop of blood and they can just measure your blood sugar level. Mm-hmm. So you're not necessarily born with it. You can develop it. But the good news is that even if you have people on both sides of your family that have it, you can take steps to delay that from happening or to prevent it altogether. Diabetes, for the most part, is largely preventable.
And if you do have diabetes, if you do go get your screening and find out you have diabetes, is it reversible or is it something you have to live
with? Well, I think that's kind of a loaded answer because it depends on a lot of factors. However, when you've been told that you have diabetes, that's not the end of the world. You actually can take steps to maybe decrease the amount of medication you need, and maybe you won't even need medication, but you can manage that with diet and exercise, right? Yeah. If you're exercising properly, you can burn off some of that extra sugar. If you're eating the appropriate foods, maybe your blood sugar won't spike. So you definitely, and I tell people all the time, and this health, you know, all health professionals should be saying this, when it comes to both diabetes and blood pressure, exercise and eating healthy are the two best things and the two things that you should do first when it comes to managing those. My mom has a diabetes. She was diagnosed later in life and she was on insulin. She had pills and then she progressed to insulin. And then I got her a gym membership, got her a trainer, made some diet changes. She wasn't happy about that, but we made some changes. Like, mom, look, this is what we're working with. And, you know, glad to say that she was able to come off of insulin. She's still on medications, but it's less than what she was before. But that's because she decided that we were really going to, you know, put our foot in it and do the work. Mm. And she's lost weight. She's healthier. She's happier. She's got her edges. Her skin is clear. I mean, come on, ladies. I mean, not just ladies, but men. You know, doing these things has not just benefits with, you know, managing your blood sugar, but overall health, wellness, you know, your energy level, all kinds of things.
So the number one takeaway from that, and just to put it in perspective for people, exercise, eating healthy, making the conscious decision to be aware of your status, getting the checkups, and even if it's just going to the grocery store and getting the blood pressure check.
Yes.
I have taken from this, people, you can take from it. I'm definitely going to share this with people, so be aware.
Absolutely.
There's something that I've been hearing about a lot more recently. I actually even saw a commercial about it. Sarcoidosis. I guess, first of all, I think I don't have a good understanding of what sarcoidosis is. So if you could help us out there. But two, it seems like that's also affecting African Americans in large numbers.
Yes. So sarcoidosis is not talked about a lot. Because it's one of those things, like, you can have it and then it can go away. Now, it does impact African Americans three times more than it does anyone else. And what it is, it's a chronic disease that can affect multiple organs, like your eyes, your skin, most often your lungs. And what it is, it's a buildup of immune system cells in these organs. So they call them granulomas. And so if you can imagine, there's a cluster of immune cells, granulomas, that form in places they're not supposed to form in, right? And so they're taking up space, they cause inflammation, and they cause that organ to malfunction or have issues. And again, most of this happens in the lungs. And so if they're small, you know, quite honestly, your lungs, if we kind of took your lungs and like rolled it all out and spread it out like on the ground, there's tons of surface area. So, you know, one or two of these granulomas won't even cause a problem. You can have these and not even know. And most people only find out that they have this when they've had an x-ray or something done for another reason. They're like, oh, you have granulomas in your lungs, you know, and then they start to investigate. Or if the granulomas are happening like in your lymph nodes and you're having inflamed or swollen lymph nodes constantly or all the time, do people understand? But the real problem here is that it happens more so in African Americans. Why? We don't really know. And so there's a lot that still needs to be discovered there. Now, is it life-threatening? If it's not treated and it's getting worse, then yes. But this is where the problem lies. You don't always know that you have it unless you start to have complications.
Yeah. Wow. Seems like there's a lot of stuff out there that we should be aware of that we're not checking into on a regular basis. I know for myself, I've experienced that, you know, there's not a fear of going to the doctor, but I always hear amongst my friends and people I know, I don't want to go to the doctor because you're there for a cold. And next thing you know, they want to tell you you got cancer. And that seems to be the general like consensus, like nobody wants to go because they don't want to know. And I myself have to fight that, like the not wanting to know if there's anything else more involved, or I have to change the way that I live in a way that is impactful. How do we fight that?
You know, that's just something we have to bite the bullet on that but I'll say it's very common. I've heard people say they don't want to go to the doctor because, like you said, you go for one thing and then you have this long, long laundry list of other things. But that's why I tell people, no news doesn't necessarily mean good news. Now, wouldn't you want to know? I think if you, the longer you put it off, the scarier it could potentially be, right? But if you go sooner, it's like when your brakes start to squeak, right? I don't know about you, but sometimes like you step on the brakes, you don't hear it all the time, but you hear a little bit of something, you're like, something might be wrong. Maybe I should go get that checked out. But then when you wait, next thing you know, you need brake pads, rotors, it's like all tore up to the floor up. And then but you kind of knew something wasn't right, but you just ignored it. And so I use that analogy and I talk to people. I'm like, you know what? You if you feel like something's right, not right, or, you know, even you haven't been to the doctor for a while, just go get a baseline assessment, because you want to know what you're working with. And if you go, and you just imagine you have the opportunity to take care of something when it's really small, really, really small. And like, I'll just take, for example, when I have people who have a little bit of a cough, they're like, no, or a little, they feel like they're having some cold symptoms and it's not gone away for a little bit. Go to the doctor, get it checked out. Mate, you know what? You might have pneumonia. And what's the doctor going to do? Maybe you'll have some, you know, here's a 5 days of antibiotics. Take these, you know, every day and it should clear up. Okay, boom, good. But if you ignore it and put it off and put it off, next thing you know, you've come to the hospital. Your pneumonia is so extreme. The infection spilled over to your bloodstream. You're septic. You got to be admitted. You're getting IV antibiotics. And it is a lot worse than had you just listened to your body up front and, you know, taken the small measures. So I really want to encourage people to don't be afraid to go to the doctor. And then even if you're afraid, go with a buddy, right? Make it a girl's trip but like a girl's pact or a guy's pact. Like, yo, you know what? We're all 40. We know it's time for, you know, that check that we don't want to get checked. Let's all go together. Let's just make a pact. Because you care about each other. So it's really important that, you know, we go not only for ourselves, but understand that we don't have to do it alone. You know, just like the ice bucket challenge, challenge someone to go to the doctor too. And then, you know, because you love each other, you care about each other. You want to see each other's, you know, through graduation, through, you know, the birth of your first kid, marriage, to all of these things. So just, you know, I encourage people to find out the why. Of why they want to stick around, why they want to be here, why they want to be healthy, and go from there.
So if I'm a parent and I'm just trying to change some things in my house to make sure that we're all here for the next 30, 40 years, where do I start?
Good question. So where do you start? I'm going to say this. Sometimes it doesn't even matter where you start, as long as you start, because if you look at every single thing, it could be overwhelming. But what I find is the easiest for most people is altering something that they already do. So what I mean by that is eating. We already eat anyways. It's not like we're going to be, you know, adding a new activity. We eat every day already. So let's look at what we're eating and make some subtle changes. Now, some people will try to go radical cold turkey and things like that. And unfortunately, those type of changes aren't usually adapted for lifelong, but make some subtle changes. So whoever does the cooking and the grocery shopping really is kind of keep the keeper of that shit. Because if you don't buy it, it's not in the house. Right. And I'll just like this. My kids don't like to go grocery shopping with me. They don't. And so when I make changes, it's like, well, you didn't go to the grocery store with me anyway. So this is what we're eating. This is what it is. And just like my mom used to say, you didn't want to eat it? Well, you now must not be hungry. So, you know, change the foods that you have access to in your house. That's the first thing. And then when it comes to, so that's buying the food. When it comes to cooking it, it's always kind of helpful to kind of make it a family affair, right? Just like, you know, get people engaged with you in the kitchen about what you're cooking or give them make them feel like they have some input. Like, okay, guys, we're going to bake chicken. This week, we're not having fried chicken. We're going to have baked chicken this week. How do you want to bake it? Do you want like barbecue sauce? Do we want teriyaki? Do we want this? And just kind of engage the family and start to have conversations around the foods that you're eating. And then, you know, that'll kind of, we don't talk enough when it comes at the dinner table already. So let's incorporate health in that conversation around the foods. Because changing what you eat is a lot easier than trying to add in a workout when you ain't never worked out in your life, right? Mm. And I have to be honest that I used to be a size 16. At one point in my life, I was a size 16, and I was able to get down to a size 6 before incorporating exercises, but just changing the way I ate.
I think that the hardest thing for me to do is to just put down the sodas. I can do it for months at a time, and then you get that one hit. It's like a drug. Right back on the sugary sodas. Is that something that a lot of people struggle with, is getting rid of the sodas? And if so, why are they allowed to put something out that's so, you know, bad for you?
Oh, gosh. So I have to admit, I used to have literally almost an addiction to Coca-Cola. So soda. Mm-hmm. And people may not know this, but these companies, they actually bring in scientists to create recipes. And these recipes are designed to not only tickle your taste buds, but also send off and trigger neurotransmitters in our brains, the feel good, the dopamine transmitters in our brains. So when you taste it, it's not only tastes good in your mouth, but it's actually signaling the release of feel good hormones in your body. So you'll want more of it. So just like Lay's potato chips, you can't have just one. Exactly. They have scientists in the lab creating those recipes. So it's true. You can't have just one because it's chemically designed so you won't have just one. So I don't know if people know that, but that's really what happens when it comes to some of these foods that you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so addicted to them. Because there's actually something happening in your brain that wants you to have more. Now, when we're born, our taste buds don't know the difference between salty, sweet, nothing, sour, nothing, barely. And a lot of the foods that we eat are acquired tastes. So just as you've acquired the taste for, like in my case, it was Coca-Cola soda, you can unacquire the taste. So don't feel like all is lost. You need to check into AA or go to some rehab. You don't. You can make changes. There's still hope. And you really have to look at the foods that you're selecting. So like, for example, when I was the size 16, no joke, I think I would drink like 4 or 5 sodas a day. Now, if you think about it, a can of Coca-Cola, I think has like maybe 200 calories of soda. And if I'm drinking 5 of those, right, that's 1,000 calories. Well, for me to just to maintain my weight is like a 2,000 calorie. I've drank half my calories in soda. So what's really important for people to do is kind of, you know, and you don't have to do this every day, but maybe a day or two, just write a diary of what you're eating and just take notice of what you're eating. And I bet once you write that food down and you write the amount of calorie or sugar or fat that's in it, it'll really paint some perspective. Because most people underestimate the amount of calories, sugar, and fat that they're eating every day. Mm-hmm. So there's still hope. You know, your favorite foods, you can change those things. And quite honestly, if you want to drink that much soda, what I've told people is like, okay, you want to drink that much soda? This is my challenge. Drink a can of water, then have the soda. Mm-hmm. So by the time you drink the water, you're already full and you can't even drink the soda. And I actually talked about this on CNN one time. The United States current president, not my president, but drinks like 12 cans of soda a day. Mm-hmm. That's like a gallon of milk. If you can visualize a gallon of soda, that's just too much, y'all. Nobody should be drinking that much soda a day. So anyway, I hope I answered that question.
So are diet drinks and things like that, are they a good alternative to things like that? Or are they just kind of like the nicotine patch where it's something to help you wean off?
They can be used to help wean you off. So, but I want to caution people though, because a lot of those sodas have artificial sweeteners. Those artificial sweeteners still have, it's not sugar, but something else. Like it might be Splenda, it might be one of the other, you know, sweet and low type of products in there. And quite honestly, those very small amounts are very potent. So in fact, they're actually oftentimes sweeter than regular sugar. So just imagine you're still having something sweet. Your brain is still going to get the signal like, ooh, this tastes good. That dopamine, that feel good hormone is going to be released. You're still going to want to drink it. And over time, those artificial sweeteners can confuse our insulin receptors and our pancreas, which secretes the insulin, and can cause confusion. And you can still end up with diabetes drinking diet soda. So just because you drink diet soda doesn't mean that you can't still get diabetes. Right now, in the short term, kind of once in a while, if you want to have it, it's still a better option than the regular mm-hmm. Coca-Cola or regular soda. However, long-term or chronic drinking of diet sodas is still just as bad for you.
This is why you're like the best nurse in America. you were trying to dodge the label earlier, but this is why you're the best nurse in America. We just went from topic to topic, and you were ready for every single one of them. And I appreciate that.
Well, you know, my really is to just help people better understand what's going on with their health, their wellness, and to take charge. And a lot of the things that we talk about are common problems. And so these are common problems that I don't mind. I mean, I love talking to people about this so I can keep you out of my emergency room, so I can keep you in the out of the ICU bed, not because I don't like you, I don't love you, but it's because I just want people to be happy and healthy at home and not in the hospital.
We need to have you back again. There's so much more to cover, and I'm sure the best nurse in America has information for us on so many other topics, but I really appreciate what you brought today, and I hope that I know I've been sitting here thinking like, all right, well, tomorrow I'm going to go ahead and throw that 2 liter away and hit the gym. So I know someone has taken something from this conversation, and thank you for the work that you do. And I really, really do want to say that we appreciate all the information and the selflessness. Well, we've talked about that, the selflessness that you're giving, and the care that you have for your patients and even people you've never met. So thank you on behalf of probably people who have no way of saying thank you.
Oh, I you know what? It's what I do. I enjoy doing it. And for people who have questions like this, sometimes they feel like they don't know who to ask, or they feel uncomfortable, or, you know, for a variety of reasons, which is why I really take pride in what I do. And that's why also why I'm so active on social media. And I actually have a website, and it's asknursealice.com. So they can visit that website. If, you know, many of the things we talked about today are on the website. There's some blogs with recipes and suggestions for exercises, because I really want to be a resource for people. And then I'm also on social media at Ask Nurse Alice. So tweet me a question, you know, send me a picture on Instagram about should I be eating this, should I not, whatever. I'd be happy to be a resource and help people at least, you know, point you in the right direction so you can take very healthy steps and live a long and happy life.
Please come back. I always like to say this, welcome to the family. You can choose your role. You could be auntie. You can't, I know you're not going to be grandmother. Sis.
Cousin.
Cousin. I'm going to be a cousin. There it is. There cuzzo. For those of you who don't know, that's what we say. Cuzzo. We, you know, cuz. But cousin, come back. Come back and visit us. Definitely one of the better conversations and informative conversations we've had. And can't say it enough. Appreciate what you're doing. Please don't stop.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thanks.
We want to thank our cousin, Nurse Alice, for stopping by and sharing with us this very important information. If you have questions or concerns, please consult your physician. Check out Nurse Alice's website at www.asknursealice.com, or please just make smart decisions about your health. Until next time, always remember you can find us at viewfromthestoop.com. Check us out on Instagram at BrownstoneMG. You can find us on Facebook, SoundCloud. Don't forget to leave comments and let us know what you think. We do this for you, family, and we're always trying to bring you the best content available. As always, it's been a pleasure to be your host. This is Kai from Brownstone. We'll catch you next time. Love.